This is Infants on Thrones.
All right, next on the list.
Are we going to do all of these?
Done with these?
Yes. I mean, is there any way that maybe we can do some of these? Because these are Throwback Fridays, right? So we've done like 8 or 9 of them.
So that'll
push us out two or three months. Yeah, that'll push us out some, you know, months worth. So it's okay if we, I don't know. Am I the only one that thinks this?
No.
Scott?
No. No, you're not.
Go, Jake, go.
John Hamer says yes, Jake.
Right. Is that something? Is that okay, Glenn? Because you look disappointed.
Don't you know how good the Throwback Friday intro is, Jake?
It's good. It's good. I'm not trying to say otherwise.
I think you're besmirching it.
Can we at least do mats of temples and ice buckets, because we haven't done a mat one.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a really good one. I like that a lot.
Let's do that one.
All right, my name's Matt from Infants on Thrones, and I've been nominated for the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
Infants on Thrones.
Minisode.
By now, we seem to be at the tail end of what's become a real cultural meme. A viral challenge that's become a symbol of charity and sacrifice, or perhaps a symbol of groupthink and narcissism. This ALS Ice Bucket Challenge is huge. Everyone's doing it. There are reports that this Ice Bucket Challenge is a huge success, with donations to ALS.org up millions compared to last year. As I've watched video after video of people dumping buckets of cold water over themselves, it's reminded me an awful lot of something I used to do pretty regularly. Attend and serve in the Mormon temple. At least that's what Mormons say they do in the temple, serve. So what does the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge have to do with a Mormon religious ceremony? Well, maybe nothing, but maybe a lot. It's no secret that Mormons view temples as the ultimate symbol of their faith. Attending and participating in the rituals there is the ultimate goal for every member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. LDS kids even sing songs about going there someday. The purpose is to get married or sealed to your spouse, which Mormons believe is a requirement to go to super VIP heaven, as Brother Jake calls it. But they also believe that this sealing allows you and your extended family to be together forever in this super VIP heaven. Mormons believe that without the temple, all family relationships will be severed at death. Now, I know that doesn't make any practical sense, but that's the belief, so just go with it. So, if the person is getting these benefits of super VIP heaven and a connection that binds them to their family forever, then why do most Mormons refer to going to the temple as, quote, serving in the temple, end quote? Well, not unlike genealogy, the reason why is not very clear to me. But the reasoning is essentially this. The personal benefits of family connections and receiving the password to get into super VIP heaven,
what's the password,
only happens the first times Mormons go through the temple. And Mormons are encouraged to attend the temple regularly, even weekly. And when they go back, they go through as a proxy for someone who's died. So Mormons believe that they really are helping people who have died get into super VIP heaven and are also helping them reconnect with their family in the afterlife. I suppose this is a noble goal, and I certainly can't fault people who believe in the literal effect of a temple for feeling that they're actually doing some good for someone who's dead. But even when I was a complete believer, I had a tough time saying that going to the temple was a form of service, and was frustrated when others would. I'd go through the ritual and realize that these were just symbols without any real tangible effect. This frustration only grew when I went through the temple for and on behalf of John Smith. I'm not kidding, John Smith. Now, I'm sure there are real John Smiths out there, but I wondered, which one am I going through for? And how does God know? I mean, the John Smith I went through for needs to be able to get into Super VIP Heaven and needs to be with his family. The answer came either from someone else or from my own mouth. It'll all work out in the end. I then learned that temples didn't have enough names and would reuse names over and over and over again. So the person I was going through for and on behalf of likely had somebody else go through for and on behalf of them a couple times previously. Well, if once was good enough, then twice and three times is even better, right? God will work it all out in the end. If that wasn't enough, I then learned that there were people who were paid by the church to come up with names, and they just flat out made them up. Again, so what? I'm sure I learned something when I went through for that fake person, and God will sort it all out in the end anyway. Soon, even as a believer, I viewed the temple as a complete waste of time, especially if God would eventually just work things out in the end. I was just moving my hands and doing these rituals to make myself believe that I was actually doing something for someone else. Once I left the church, the temple was still a symbol for me, but it was a different sort of symbol. It was a symbol of the time I wasted when I was a believer. I realized the temple was incredibly inefficient. At one point in the temple, a prayer is offered, and the person saying the prayer holds up a bag, and in the bag is a whole bunch of strips of paper with names on it. Faithful members write the name of a friend or loved one they feel needs help, of a special prayer. A prayer that might have more effect because it was made in the temple. This is called a prayer roll. The person saying the prayer picks up the bag of names and says something like, "We pray for all those whose names are contained here and the names of people written on the prayer rolls of all the temples this day." So I remember thinking, if they can do that for the prayer, why not do one temple session for all the people who have died? Boom! One big mega proxy to ensure all people will get all the ordinances they need to get to Super VIP Heaven and to be with their families forever. Or if that wasn't good enough, why not just wait till the millennium? A time I was taught we would be doing temple work. Certainly all the righteous resurrected people would be able to make short work of all the names of people who needed their work done. I realized I was in Office Space, and the church is Lumberg, and going to the temple was the equivalent of putting a cover sheet on a TPS report. Just something to keep me and the rest of the members busy.
Ooh, yeah, I'm going to have to go ahead and sort of disagree with you there.
There's no effect, no impact, no service that's being done. It's a futile symbol which only served to make me feel righteous and justified in my self-righteousness.
If God, I have failed indeed. Ooh, yeah.
Pretty cynical, I know. I'm sure there are people out there that can talk about the value of symbolism, the value of ritual, and the value of the temple. I mean, heck, I used to always say, well, regardless of whether or not the work I was doing in the temple actually had some effect on somebody, that if I was able to think about a dead person symbolically, hopefully that would cause me to do something to help real people that I interacted with on a daily basis. But I didn't. I think of all the hours spent in the temple, and I realize I would have been better off mowing my elderly neighbor's yard. But I didn't. Because just like most people, I found that participating in a symbol of sacrifice and charity was easier than actually sacrificing or being charitable.
You are pathetic and weak.
So, what does my temple experience have to do with the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge? Well, like those who attend the temple, I have no doubt that everyone who's done the Ice Bucket Challenge means well. And I'm sure they feel like they've done something. And as I've said earlier, as a result of this viral Ice Bucket Challenge, donations are up for ALS research. And I'm noticing a lot more people recently focus more on donating. But too often, I've seen people and still see people challenge others who say, you have to do this or donate. Now, for the people who donate and do the challenge, thanks for the donation. And I'm thanking you because not long ago, my mother-in-law had knee replacement surgery. And after the surgery, her foot didn't really work anymore. The doctors attributed some nerve damage and assured her that she just needed to work on a rehab program. She didn't get better. Her kids assumed that part of the reason was because she wasn't working hard enough to do the exercise she was supposed to do, even though she really was. Soon she got weaker and weaker, and she wasn't able to walk hardly at all, and had a very difficult time getting around her house and doing the things she needed to do. She started having breathing issues, and the doctors attributed it to a bout with pneumonia. Eventually, she ended up in the hospital on a breathing machine and unable to walk. It turned out she had ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And although no one knew it at the time, that's what had caused all her health issues the year before. The ironic thing is that, unlike some diseases, even if the doctors had diagnosed it earlier, there was nothing they could have done. There's no treatment to cure or even slow down this debilitating and deadly disease. And almost with malice, it struck down the mother of the most important person in my life. So I guess I'm glad that people are more aware of this disease than they were at the beginning of the summer. My family's awareness of this disease came as an icy bath to the heart. But being aware of the problem doesn't really do anything to solve the problem unless awareness turns to action. So, I'm not doing the Ice Bucket Challenge, but I am nominating everyone who has or who will be nominated to do the Ice Bucket Challenge to participate in the symbol if you want. But don't stop there. Donate something. Or find someone with ALS and help them with something. Because there's probably something they just can't physically do for themselves. And I'm also nominating people who attend the temple. Participate in the ritual. Participate in the symbol. But don't stop there. There's probably somebody in your ward or in your neighborhood that could use a little service. And ALS isn't the only malicious disease out there. My dad and a close friend are currently battling different forms of cancer. Both of them are unlikely to win this battle. And both, my dad in his early 70s and my friend who's barely 35, will be struck down too soon. So, I guess I'm also nominating everyone out there to do the Ice Bucket Challenge for cancer. Or better yet, go get and encourage your loved ones to go get a colonoscopy or visit a person who's in the hospital dealing with cancer or what comes with cancer treatments. You know, come to think of it, Parkinson's, diabetes, MS, CMV, and hemophilia are all diseases that affect people I know and love. All of these diseases need awareness, attention, and money. Those people and families living and dying with these diseases all probably need some sort of help. So I guess I'm nominating everyone to do an Ice Bucket Challenge and donate to one of those diseases as well. Also, I mean, if you're willing to be uncomfortable by pouring ice water over your head, although here in Arizona in August, an ice bath is more of a treat than a sacrifice. But if you're willing to be uncomfortable with ice, let someone stick you with a needle and donate blood instead of, or at least in addition to, the Ice Bucket Challenge. And we can even post ourselves getting the injection and donating blood and put that on the internet or Facebook or Instagram or our blogs or whatever we're doing and let that go viral. There really are probably an endless list of worthy causes that have real need and are worthy of attention. So, since this has become a bit of a soapbox-standing, preachy sermon of a minisode, I'll end the way many good Mormon sermons end. I challenge you, my good brothers and sisters of this podcast, and I challenge myself, to find those worthy causes that we care about and do something for them that can affect change. Do something that's more than a symbol. Or, if you like symbolism, awesome. Do that too. But don't just be a symbol of sacrifice and charity. Be the embodiment of sacrifice and charity. Otherwise, We're all just cold and wet. And I leave you with this. In the name of humanism, personal connections, sacrifice, and love. Anyone for the closing prayer?
So that was when you, when the whole ALS ice bucket thing was happening.
Right.
And it was sort of this critique of this faux activism or this, you know, this symbolic, anyway, how would you describe it? What were you thinking at the time?
Well, it was, I was one that got frustrated with the videos, thinking, but this isn't doing anything. You're not accomplishing anything. And I immediately started thinking about the temple and the hamster wheel of you're not doing anything when you go. And so I kind of created something with that, and maybe my opinions changed as I went through and thought more about symbols and the ice bucket challenge and comparing to the temple.
And all the millions that was actually made just by making people aware that this was a very underfunded research that affects people in horrendous ways. And like, and you used my, or Glenn edited in, I don't know if it was you or Glenn, I did an ice bucket challenge, but I also donated $100. Mm-hmm. So the awareness made me donate $100 I wouldn't have done otherwise.
Yeah, and to a cause that happens in the here and now, and not for imaginary people who have died and they're waiting in spirit prison that you're releasing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those people actually existed.
Huh?
I mean,
they exist dead, but do they
now? Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, in that sense, yes, they're imaginary.
Are they standing in the prison doors just going, Jake, why didn't you go to Ward Temple night last week?
Right.
Jake, you were supposed to go.
Jake, promise, Jake.
You broke your promise. Right. Yeah.
Jake.
You didn't get me in doubt for the 13th time.
Yeah. I know, but there's some huge-ass bouncer for Spirit Paradise. He's like, where's your temple record? Like, get out of here. You're not on the list. I'm sorry. You're not on the list.
Because some asshole decided he wanted to watch a movie instead of go to Ward Temple.
Exactly.
Night.
Yeah. Take it up with that guy.
Yeah.
And Tom, I wanted to ask you this, and then we can be done. But when you were talking earlier about the changes that you've made in the last 3 years, do you take your coffee any differently now than you did when you did this coffee?
Yeah, he does coffee enemas now.
Oh, is coffee on the list?
Yeah.
Yeah, your coffee episode.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've actually finished an entire cup of black coffee since then. So, yeah, I've grown pubes in since then, too.
I know. I can see them.
They just came in on your chin.
Finally matching.
My ball hair.
But you did eventually come to the realization that there's other ways other than black to enjoy coffee.
Nope.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to...
Infants on Thrones.
It's Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones. Okay, let's hear it.
Hey, welcome back. My name's Tom Perry, and I appreciate you listening. Today's episode originally was intended to be a mini-sode, but it didn't quite work out that way. Instead, it turned into kind of a story, like a story time with Tom podcast. So I hope you'll humor me with the different direction that this goes. One of the most distinguishable moral codes a Mormon has is what's called the Word of Wisdom. And for those of you that don't know, the Word of Wisdom is a system of values and rules which consists of not drinking alcohol, using tobacco, drinking coffee, tea, caffeinated soda, well, depending on who you ask, of course, eating meat sparingly, yada, 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 so that you can find wisdom and great treasures. Even hidden treasures are... Sorry about that. Obviously, the two biggies in the Word of Wisdom is tobacco and alcohol. All too often, they end up getting the spotlight. But for the sake of this story, I want to focus on tobacco and alcohol's sidekick, the hot drink. According to LDS.org, Latter-day prophets have taught that the term, quote, hot drinks, as written in D&C 89, plainly refers to tea and coffee. I've done some additional digging into what exactly is defined in this area because just using the term coffee and tea is quite broad. Decaf coffee can be seen as allowable depending on your local church leader, of course. And the church has defined that it is only the black and green teas that are the forbidden teas. So, the emphasis does appear to be on the caffeine ingredient, but I don't necessarily want to get bogged down on the slippery slope that this causes, but I do want to acknowledge the problematic areas that are created from this vague stance that the church uses. One of the side effects of clearly not stating which caffeine is good or not causes certain problems, as you can imagine. For example, they do allow church members to hold a temple recommend if they drink caffeinated soda, but they don't allow caffeinated soda to be sold on BYU campus and at the Missionary Training Center. So what exactly are they trying to say here? And yes, as you can imagine, this has caused some controversy.
To a caffeine controversy at BYU. Soda containing caffeine was accidentally placed in vending machines on the caffeine-free campus. ABC4 Utah's Kim Johnson is in Provo with what students are saying about the slip-up.
The caffeinated Cokes have since been removed from the vending machines. Now you can only find the caffeine-free kind, but the caffeine buzz is still going strong on campus.
Caffeine, something typically never seen on the Brigham Young University campus, showed up Tuesday in vending machines in the Brimhall building. A student snapped this picture and put it on Facebook. After word spread, another even tweeting people were literally running to the machine. In an email, a spokesperson for BYU tells ABC4, Coke mistakenly included a limited number of caffeinated Coke Zeros in our order, which no one caught while the vending machines were being stocked. It was simply a mistake. Our purchasing decisions have not changed.
I think that it's an honest mistake, and really, the truth is, like, it's just a couple cans of, like, caffeinated Coke. It shouldn't be that big of a deal.
BYU doesn't offer caffeinated beverages on campus, even after the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints clarified their stance on caffeine this year, saying it's not against church standards.
General authorities have clarified their policy, saying that caffeinated beverages were never not allowed, were never disallowed. I think it should be up to the individuals.
A demand for caffeine on campus has grown on Facebook. Since it's formed, this BYU for Caffeine page now has almost 2,500 likes. While students we talked with tell us they don't drink caffeine, it should be available for those who want it.
Caffeine, it's not drugs. I mean, caffeine is a drug, but it's not like it's cocaine or something like that.
So there you have it. Out of the mouth of a BYU student. It's a drug, but it's not like it's cocaine. So until the church comes forward with a clear rule on sodas and energy drinks, many rebellious members will continue to drink their caffeinated sodas, even if they need to smuggle them onto campus. So about 5 years ago, I had my very own crisis of faith. I've been navigating these troubled waters of negotiation with my wife and family since then. It hasn't been easy to balance a new life of being an unbeliever all the while still being supportive to my wife and family. And it certainly has had its ups and downs for sure, but I'm in a relatively stable and happy place right now. My wife and I have found multiple ways to negotiate our marriage since my new position in relation to the church, and that has helped out a lot. One way we negotiate is that she allows me to stay home on occasion, and in return, yeah, I'm cool with attending once in a while. One added benefit of this is that we found more and more ways of respecting each other and accepting each other's own journeys. I'm proud to say that my entire life growing up in the church, I've never tasted alcohol and have been very faithful at keeping my end of the bargain when it comes to keeping the Word of Wisdom. But now that I no longer believe in the absolute truth claims of the church, I've been hankering for trying a few things on that previously banned list. The only real thing on that list that I've always wanted to try is that Temptress, the hot drink, not tea. Nobody really cares about that. I'm talking about coffee. My grandfather used to drink coffee, and I've spent plenty of time around that smell of coffee. You know you've smelled it. Not only has this divinely created aroma found a way into my heart in an early age, but truth be told, I slowly began to develop a crush on coffee. I would even go into the candy section of the grocery store and purchase coffee-flavored candy or even coffee-flavored ice cream. You can even ask my wife. She can vouch for that, right?
Oh, do you remember the time you came, here, honey, here, try this. It's my favorite candy in the world. Here, try this.
Candy.
The coffee nips.
Oh, yeah,
here,
they're
try
great.
This, try this.
Have you tried? You tried it?
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome, right?
Went right into the trash can.
It's awesome.
Awful.
I don't know what's wrong with your taste buds. That's great. You know, there are so many people out there that just look at coffee as just a simple means to an end. Like it's just something to pass the time, something that gives them a slight kick that helps them through the day. Most don't even give coffee its rightful due. They order it and then they don't even give a slight minute to really appreciate what is exactly in that cup. I've seen people go into coffee shops, order coffee, and then sit and then do something else, like write their million-dollar award-winning screenplay, or enter into some lighthearted conversation that's completely unrelated to coffee with someone. It's like the coffee doesn't even exist. They completely ignore the coffee. So you're probably thinking, how obsessed with coffee was I really? Well, funny you should ask, because my wife addresses that a little
bit. Okay, well, how about this? For years, the whole time we've been married, you have an obsession with coffee. The smell, the taste.
Yes, I have.
And
why don't you? Have you smelled it? It's amazing.
It's awful.
So now, as you can see, I find myself in a very precarious situation. I no longer believe in the truthfulness of these Word of Wisdom rules, so does this mean what I think it means? Does it mean that I could possibly try coffee for the first time? Yeah, I think I can. So I slowly began to entertain the idea of giving it an honest go and started to build up my confidence to finally approach this longtime crush of mine and ask her out for the very first time. So I began to outline my plan of attack. In my mind, I began to design my initial approach. I would target any local coffee shop or maybe even a Starbucks. And of course, I would have enough cash on me, you know, to eliminate any possible paper trail. Put on a black hoodie. Most coffee drinking goths wear hoodies. So essentially, it'll be my coffee drinking camouflage. And I'll blend right in, right? I just need to balance out my disguise enough that I don't look like a damn bank robber. No need to draw any more negative attention than's needed. So I began wondering what exactly was the first coffee I was going to order. Well, that was obvious to me. A black coffee, of course. I've seen enough movies and TV, and I've known enough people that drink coffee to know that any real man orders black coffee.
I used to hate black coffee. Let's face it, black coffee is manly. You think Clint Eastwood ever ordered a cream and two sugars? Of course not. Do you know why? Well, because Clint Eastwood was a man.
None of that sugary creamer bullshit. The stuff that puts hair on your chest. And I was a real man. I certainly didn't need to sugarcoat a real man's drink. So shortly after I ordered my first cup, I would need to find a table in the back corner of the cafe and enjoy her all to myself. Just me and her. Me enjoying her warmth, holding her close, becoming intoxicated on her delicious aroma, and all the while trying to control myself enough that I don't act prematurely and end up getting burned. Literally. Well, as you can probably predict, this fantasy of mine ended up as most fantasies do. As just a fantasy. There were plenty of times that my fantasy would become borderline obsessive, but I grew up Mormon. I knew how to handle these kinds of things. I'd just turn it off, you know, like a light switch.
Turn it off like a light switch. Just go click. It's a cool little Mormon trick.
They just never pulled the trigger and let her into my life. Believe me, each and every time I was in a diner or cafe or even a gas station during the morning hours, that amazing smell would slap me directly in the face and my entire body would begin to swoon. But I held strong. I'm not exactly sure why, but I think it was either a combination of fear, self-doubt, or maybe the thought that I would somehow end up disappointing my wife that prevented me from carrying out the deed. But it wasn't long before something happened that changed my life forever. Something so unexpected. Something that no one could have predicted. As I said before, my wife still attends and believes in certain aspects of the church. So you can imagine my surprise when my wife bought me a coffee maker. Yeah, you heard me. My wife bought her unbelieving spouse a coffee maker on her own. You know, the ones the apostates have in their homes as a non-believing trophy. Now I had my very own apostate trophy in my own home. So you might be asking, why exactly did she do this? And I was asking myself the same things, so I had to ask her. Okay, babe.
Hey, honey.
So why don't you go over again why it is that you decided that you wanted to buy your husband a coffee maker?
Why I bought my husband a coffee maker?
Well, because you're the believer, right? You're the one that goes to church, still puts up with the nursery kids. You have this apostate, disgruntled, very obnoxious husband. So you were essentially insuring your husband to not get a temple recommend. You feel good about yourself?
I do.
Okay, so why? Why? Because I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, you know, you're supposed to pull me back, right? Every member of missionary, you're not doing that. You're letting him fall even farther by into the depths of apostasy by letting him drink coffee. I mean, that's so heathenistic of you.
Well, you know, what am I supposed to say? Love him and want him to be able to be himself.
Did you guys hear that? She just wants me to be myself. Damn, I love that woman. Do you think this is one of those things where you're like, I'll let him try this. He's wanted to try it forever. Instead of me cheating on you with coffee, you decided to just bring her into the house?
Why not? I'll just help you right along with it.
All right. So you can imagine that my mind began to spin like crazy. I now had the full support of my amazing, loving wife to overcome my virginity of coffee. I wouldn't have to do this all on my own. So it was the very next day that she took me shopping for coffee for the very first time. We looked at all the different options. I couldn't believe how many different brands and flavors there were, even in Utah County. There really is a large selection of coffee. Flavors, sugars, creamers, all kinds of different blends, additives. They even have whole coffee beans that you can grind at home. Did you hear me? Whole coffee beans. You can grind your own coffee beans at home. Holy balls! I kid you not. I couldn't believe it either. So we picked up a large variety of different brands and blends to give me the proper deflowering. So it was late one evening after we put the kids to bed that we decided to give it a go. So after we carefully placed everything in their new rightful earned place in the kitchen, she came over and sat next to me. She then began to ask me how I wanted my first cup. I tried to meet her gaze, but I just couldn't. So I looked at the floor and I mumbled softly, "Black?" She said, moving in a little bit closer, what was that? I took a deep breath, straightened up my back, you know, like a real man, puffed out my chest, looked her straight in the eye, and said louder than I should have, "Black!" My wife had worked at a convenience store and in fast food in her teens, so she knew her way around a coffee maker. So she stood up and said with a very evil smile on her face, "Coming right up." We decided to forego any flavored blends because I felt like this would completely distract from my enjoyment of the true unfiltered raw flavor that has accompanied that incredibly intoxicating smell all these years. So I sat at the table very nervous, palms beginning to sweat, my right leg slightly beginning to bounce, and I carefully listened to the noises of the coffee making process. The collecting and pouring of the grinds into the filter. the sound of the water slowly being heated. And then that crackling, squishing sound of the water mixing and beginning to fill the coffee pot. You could begin to see the steam slowly push out of the coffee pot as the coffee began to enter in. I started to see small glimpses of steam escape from the coffee pot. I kid you not. It looked like little white angels with wings dissipating into thin air. I actually wanted to write my name on the side of the pot with my finger into the condensation, but I showed self-control and held back. So my wife grabbed a recently cleaned mug and lovingly began to pour the black gold into the cup. I grabbed the mug within seconds, and I immediately felt how hot the cup was in my hand and began to panic as I quickly sat it back down on the table, trying not to spill it. Oh, that's why coffee mugs have those little handles on the side. Yeah, I get it now. I didn't see the face of Lucifer in the blackness inside the mug as I originally thought, which was a relief. At first, I just stared at the black surface, moving my head close so I could take it all in. I closed my eyes, took a deep breath as deeply as a pot smoker would, and I began to feel a bit lightheaded and let out a breath. Oh man, that smell. I slowly began to nod my head. Yeah, it was time. So I placed my finger inside the designated hole on the side of the mug, using my thumb for support. I got this, I thought. I slowly brought it up to my lips, lightly blowing on the surface, and took my first sip. I could actually feel the intensity of my wife's glare. She quickly says to me, "So, what do you think?" I asked her if the coffee maker was working properly. She said it was working perfectly. Then I asked her if she might not be remembering how to work a coffee maker. You know, it had been several years since she's used one. "Of course I remember how to use a coffee maker," she said, very offended. Well, one thing was for sure. Something was wrong. Really, really wrong. "Maybe it's the brand of coffee we used," I said out loud. She reminded me that we began with a very high-quality brand and once again reminded me that, yes, she followed the directions perfectly and that everything was working properly. So with raised eyebrows and a slight frown, I took yet another sip. Yeah, this shit was absolutely disgusting. It wasn't that long ago that I was very sick and I was drinking DayQuil for like 3 or 4 days in a row. And I remember thinking that I would have preferred to take a long pull from the DayQuil bottle than to have to drink any more of this bitter tasting dirt. We brewed several other brands and flavors that we had purchased and tweaked with the mixture, all to no avail. No matter what we tried, it always ended up with that overwhelming bitter dirt taste. There was just no getting around it. Coffee tastes like shit. So where did this leave me? Now I find myself with what could be considered a 72-hour kit of nothing but coffee, and this unresolved need to find a way to enjoy coffee. How exactly was I supposed to keep my apostate credibility if I couldn't stomach coffee? Besides, I needed to date her a little bit longer. You know, to really get to know her first before I completely decided to separate and dump her. So yeah, I took all this as a direct challenge. And if you know me, I'm not the kind of guy who likes to back down from a challenge. So now what? I now own my very own coffee maker and all this ground coffee. I could actually feel my apostate trophy taunting me from the kitchen countertop. Each and every time I saw someone happily drinking coffee out on the street, I felt like a coward. I was in a corner. I needed to find a way to make it work, even if it was just temporarily, just to get rid of this newly acquired stash. I needed to find something that could help me ease me into the pearly gates of blackness. So yeah, I conceded to get some creamers and to try some sweeteners. I know, even now, I'm instinctively reaching back into my wallet to remove my man card. I know what you're thinking. What a wuss. And you know what? You might be right, but hey, I refused to go down without a fight. I was going to find a way to enjoy coffee. I've come way too far to wuss out now. That being said, I gotta be honest. This has been a very difficult thing to accept. The truth was out. This little seductive temptress was nothing but aroma and had nothing else to offer. So, for those of you that haven't tried coffee yet, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but coffee doesn't taste good. And I had to learn it the hard way. You're immediately pulled in with that aroma. And you take that first eager taste, and you quickly realize you've been deceived. So, do you remember when we tried at the very beginning to go black?
Oh, that was awesome.
Because I felt like if I'm going to be a real man, because yes, I want my wife...
Hair,
I want,
and hair on my chest.
That's
and...
right. No, but to the black coffee thing, because I remember when I was telling you about it, and then I wanted to drink black. And you said, okay, and you brewed up that first cup, and it was god-awful. It just tasted like crap. I remember one of my first thoughts was, this is worse than drinking a warm glass of NyQuil or DayQuil, you know, that stuff, because it seemed like it was just a month or so ago that I was drinking that DayQuil because I had a head cold or something, and how awful that was. And every time I drink it, I'd have to,
you know, take a juice chaser.
Well, I mean, I've never
shot a NyQuil with it.
Yeah, it's like I was drinking shots or something, and I had to drink some, and then I had to wash it down with a juice or a water or something like that because it tasted so bad. But when I drank this coffee, that's what it was like. It was rough, man. It was rough. And I remember how bad you were laughing at me.
Oh, I laughed so hard. I even had to share it with a friend of mine who drinks coffee. I was like,
"Oh, that's so, right."
So, our neighbor, how do you choke your coffee down? She's like, "Sugar and cream is the only way. Other than that, if you don't, it's nasty."
Did you ever invite her over?
I took her a strong drink when she was getting ready to pack up. Remember that?
I
want to bring you a strong drink, and the strongest drink I could find in the house was my husband's coffee and creamer.
So did you make her a cup and brought it over to her?
Oh,
yeah, cool.
That was funny.
Well, see, now you're inviting two people into sin.
Yeah.
I remember how impressed or flattered I was that you did that for me. I wasn't expecting it. You know that.
Right. Flattered that I
was very flattered that you did that for me.
In my opinion, drinking a cup of coffee or letting you try a cup of coffee basically is something that's been in your background of wanting to do for a long time. Don't see any harm in it.
So you don't see any harm in it?
I don't see any harm in it.
Even if the church sort of does. Not sort of, but they do.
Becomes that slippery slope where it's saying, well, you can drink caffeinated soda, but lay off your caffeinated coffee.
So you really don't even subscribe to the church's rules on it, right?
No.
No?
I guess not.
So if the bishop comes to you and says, Sister Perry.
Yes, how the bishop comes and says, do you drink hot drinks? I'm like, yes, I drink my herbal tea. Ooh.
Okay, but what if he says, do you drink coffee? And now that you've tried the dirt water, because that's what you said it tastes like.
Dirt water.
What if he says, have you ever tried coffee?
I can say, yep.
And then what if he says, shame on you. You don't get a recommend. Or, what if he puts you on probation? Or what if he puts you in a church court?
for taking a sip of something to see what it tastes like. Shame on him. I wanted to see what it tastes like. What was so exciting about it?
Okay.
Stuff's nasty.
So we went out and purchased some peppermint mocha liquid creamer. I like peppermint. I don't love it, but I like it. So we decided to start over from the beginning. I began by thoroughly cleaning all the equipment that were involved in the previous crime scene. We also purchased some expensive purified water because some say that makes a huge difference, and got ready to give it another go. So take two. My wife measured out the proper mix, placed it in the filter, poured in the proper amount of filtered water, and I washed over her shoulder with doubts immediately clouding my mind. It's over, Tom. It's just never going to happen. Coffee beat you, bro. Coffee won, Tom nothing. So as a boxer who gets a chance at a rematch from a previous defeat, I grab this cup with renewed vigor. And as an NBA athlete who tells himself at the foul line, I can do this. I looked into this mug, and what was once black was now this light brown, hot chocolate imitating bullshit. Who cares? Take that thought right out of your mind, Tom. Focus on the end game. So I closed my eyes with full determination, and without hesitation, I took that dreaded sip. My clenched eyes that were forced closed were quickly beginning to open in astonishment. Is this the same coffee? No way, can't be. This certainly isn't great, but holy hell! I think I can take another sip without nausea setting in. I looked at my eager wife and said, I think we did it. I think we found a coffee I can drink. And we embraced as if I'd won the biggest football game of my career. So yeah, while I did make some slight concessions to eventually find a way to drink coffee, the cool part is I did it with the help of my wonderful wife. And one thing that actually brings a lot of peace to my heart is knowing that I'm not alone in this. Can you guess who else went through a similar struggle with coffee? Actor and comedian Jerry Seinfeld.
So we were broadcasting our stories across Morning Edition's Coffee Week when we got a note. Jerry Seinfeld was listening with interest, understandably so, since he launched a web program last summer called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. And that was really all the excuse we needed to invite Mr. Seinfeld into our New York bureau. He arrived for our chat with a cup of coffee in hand, which he says he would never have done years earlier. Turns out all those years he spent on the show Seinfeld, sitting with Elaine, George, and Kramer at Monk's Cafe, he never touched his coffee.
I never liked it, and I didn't understand it. And I used to do a lot of stuff in my stand-up set in the 80s and 90s about how I don't get coffee. I don't understand why everyone's so obsessed with this drink.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, I need it because when I wake up, I feel groggy. And I say, well, you just got up.
It's okay.
Maybe if you give it a little time, it'll change. So that was my old attitude about coffee. And then something happened about 5 years ago. I started touring a lot, and we would have these great big fun breakfasts in the hotel, and it just seemed to go really well with the French toast.
Okay.
And then I got married, and I had a family, and my entire day was not free for social interaction.
Right.
And eating is annoying, difficult to arrange, hard to choose places, and meeting someone for coffee suddenly seemed like a wonderful, compact, accessible, and portable social interaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something to do. My theory is 98% of all human endeavor is killing time.
And this is a way to do it. And
yeah, this is a great way to do
it. And you're so right. If you called up someone and said, let's just meet on a street corner and chat for 20 minutes, that doesn't seem to make any sense. But
Exactly. Now you've got, doesn't make sense. And it's awkward. That's like, you know, these comedians that don't work with the microphone. You know, they have like a clip-on thing or something. It's uncomfortable for the audience. They want to see you with something in your hand. It's more relaxing.
And it aids conversation because you are working with your hands. You have props. You can look away from the other person when you need to think for a moment because
right.
You pretend to focus on the cream. There
right.
are things you can do.
Yeah, I do a little thing about the way people shake the sweetener packet.
Mm-hmm.
you know, like they're all excited. Like, I can't wait to hear this whole story. I want to get all the granules down to one end. I love all these rituals. I don't even really know. I just learned about a black eye yesterday. What? You know what a black eye is?
No idea.
A black eye is two shots of espresso. Red eye is one shot. Black eye is two shots.
Okay.
It's very here's the secret to really being a great coffee enjoyer. You want the sophistication of the snob without the pretension of the snob. You want to know what's going on, but don't be a fuss budget about it. You know what I mean?
Great advice for almost every facet of life.
Right.
Why do you think it is that coffee is so central to our culture, that there's a coffee shop on every corner if you're in a city, that it's just everywhere, that people offer it to you wherever you go?
That is the question. And I think the answer is we all need a little help, and the coffee's a little help with everything. Social, energy, don't know what to do next, don't know how to start my day, don't know how to get through this afternoon. We want to do a lot of stuff. We're not in great shape. We didn't get a good night's sleep. We're a little depressed. Coffee solves all these problems in one delightful little cup.
Here's another fun clip that I think complements the first one, is where Jerry Seinfeld talks to Jay Leno about why drinking coffee can be so important for us, just socially.
First time, you don't drink coffee.
No, I've never had coffee in my life.
Why?
I don't like hot liquid. You know that. I've never had...
No, I don't know that.
I don't like hot liquid, hot... If it doesn't have ice in it, I don't drink it. But you're fascinated.
He's so weird, this guy.
I am not weird.
It's amazing that this person has been accepted by America. Yeah. I don't drink coffee.
I don't drink coffee.
I've never gotten high. I've never had alcohol.
I don't drink alcohol.
You could be the Pope.
I could be the Pope. I would be a good Pope. Thank you. Now, I want to understand your fascination with coffee. Why? What is it you find fascinating?
Well, people talk about coffee differently than everything else. People don't drink coffee. They have coffee. Okay. They say, I'm having my coffee. May I have my coffee?
Right.
And have is a word that you use when you're talking about important things.
Okay.
You have sex. You have surgery.
Right.
You have second thoughts.
Yeah.
About having sex while you're having surgery.
That makes sense.
People say, how do you take your coffee? Take it. Take is another big word.
Yeah.
You take sides, take advantage. If you're a sniper, you have the shot, take them out.
Nice. Well, how about other beverages? Would you ever do...
No.
Ginger ale?
No, because coffee gets people sippy and chatty, and they like to take their sweetener packets and shake them, you know.
And, don't do that,
and they go, oh, I want to hear this whole story. You know?
Now, I know that many of you out there that have transitioned out of Mormonism have jumped right into coffee with no resistance at all. Well, I take my hat off to those of you that were able to pull this off. But for those of you that have struggled, or maybe even currently struggling with her blackness, dude, I totally feel your pain. And listen, I certainly don't want this podcast to sound like I'm endorsing coffee. Not at all. It certainly isn't for everyone. And there's an argument to be had that coffee isn't for me either.
Over a cup of coffee, and I just have to look away.
My experience with trying coffee has had its own parallels with my journey leaving the church. At one point during my crisis, I believed that leaving the church would bring my heart and soul that long-awaited peace that I'd been longing for. Because I'd been doing all those mental gymnastics required to stay in the church, all the while enduring incredible dissonance as a form of resistance to the inevitable unbelief status that long awaited me. And I thought, once I fully accepted not believing, that I would surely feel better, right? Well, not exactly. That smell of fully accepting my unbelief was indeed intoxicating. So to accept the unbelief had to mirror that smell, right? Not at all. Leaving has had many, many difficult challenges. I'm now forced to accept a level of uncertainty that I'm really uncomfortable with. It is not cool. Very, very bitter, raw, and unnerving. But I gotta tell you, with time, some really great friends, an amazing wife and family, and all that followed up with regular doses of fun and humor as my own forms of creamer and sweeteners, leaving doesn't taste quite as bitter as it did when I first started.
But you did eventually come to the realization that there's other ways other than black to enjoy coffee.
Nope.
Hey, Tom and I had a cup of coffee together. Black coffee, right?
Yeah, you're right. I just said, I'll have what he's having. He's like, I'm going straight. I was like, I'm going straight too.
Yeah, but you were kind of like, oh, great. Now that you did it, now I have to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, I had to do the peer pressure thing. Like, well, he's not having difficulty drinking it. I can do this.
Where was this? Was this at the comedy thing at Sunstone?
No, this was...
You know, the best way, if you're going to take it black and you just want the effect of coffee,
yeah,
espresso. Just take it like a double shot of espresso, and then you can, it literally is like a shot, and you shoot it. You don't have to like choke down, you know, 8 ounces of black shit coffee.
It's not that bad.
I love black coffee.
It's acquired.
Yeah, I'm actually getting to where I don't hate it. So yeah,
and we have a nice thing that our coffee maker grinds it. So we go over to the, you know, we have a coffee shop, where we just buy beans and grind them, and it's good stuff every morning. So
did you guys hate that episode?
No,
I liked it a lot.
I think it was universally loved, dude.
I think my wife was on that. I remember talking to her about it. Because it was pretty cool how she's handled the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, she's been really, really great. Because I think part of it, she just likes to watch me suffer. I think that's part of it. Drink your coffee. I'm going to watch you.
Take your medicine.
Yeah.
That's your apostate medicine. How's that taste?
To put a coffee maker in your house? Like, even, like for me leaving the church, it took me a while before I was comfortable taking my garments off. But I was way comfortable having my garments off before I was ever comfortable having a coffee maker in my house.
No, I mean, I'll tell you, like, so I went with my Mormon grandparents, so my mom's parents, Mike and I went with them to like our ancestral family hometown where my grandfather had built like 50 different houses. He was a carpenter, and we went around and took pictures of their houses for a family history trip. And then we went to a cafe or a diner for lunch in that town. And when we, like, Mike and I ordered coffee, like, they were almost the level of freak out that my grandparents were having sitting with their gay married grand. He didn't give a rat's ass that they're with their gay married grandson, but the fact that we're drinking coffee was like, it's crazy. No, that's just...
Well, all right, yeah, it's out. Lost his mind when post on Facebook, I'm at a coffee shop enjoying a black coffee, and I assume that he's going to go to a prostitute next, because that's the next logical step.
Well, obviously, yeah.
Clearly. You had to correct him and be like, no, there's like 4 steps in between the process.
Why don't you just rinse the coffee off the prostitute and just call it a day?
Just snort coffee rinds on her.
Crazy.
What, the word of wisdom thing, I mean, that. Well, I think Scott and I were talking about this today. The whole coffee and alcohol thing is such a... just a threshold. It's such an announcement that here's where I'm at.
Way down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find those extra cups to fill. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
Hi, this is Stan from Canada. When I'm out and about, I like to listen to Infants on Thrones. They're the best, eh? You can comment on this episode on the website, www.infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
You'll see. No potato juice. Cause the planners down in Santa's all say no, no, no. The politician's daughter was accused of drinking water and was fined a great big $50 bill. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
sisters in Zion will all make lasagna, supporting the brethren with casseroles and pies. They'll pat our sweet heads and say, "Ladies, good on you for doing the lame stuff we leaders despise." How vague is our purpose? How bland is our mission? Not knowing what exalted means for us chicks, but kind of suspecting its abject submission forever and always, 'cause we don't have priesthood. How vague is our purpose? How bland is our mission? Not knowing what exalted means for us chicks, but kind of suspecting its abject submission forever and always, 'cause we don't have priesthood.
Thank you for listening to Imprints on Thrones.
Imprints on Thrones.